Yeah, so when we get to Badwater and it was 117, well, it was 115 the day before the race. I thought I didn't have any issues. I thought the heat was overrated.
That is Ron Ross, ultra marathon man, if you will. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Ron Ross was referring to a race called by many the toughest race on earth. It's the Badwater 135. That's right, 135 miles in Death Valley. Ross did it this year, and he just keeps on hitting those endurance milestones few can even imagine. He says that his military background provided the foundation for his endurance. And then he said his many years in law enforcement helped as well. He's a Medina, Ohio guy, and at age 65, that's right, 65, he says he is conceding nothing to age. He finished almost 90 100-mile ultra marathons in his running career, and he has that ultimate goal of 100 100s. And then add to that, all about 180 or more marathons and other kinds of races, and you can see that this man's resume is absolutely impressive. So what drives Ron Ross? I sat down with him very recently, and here is our conversation. Hope you enjoy it. Ron, it's just great to have you on the podcast. You're accomplishments in ultra marathon running, absolutely spectacular. But you have a real intriguing story in the sense that you come from a military background, then in the police, many years as a policeman and a sergeant. And through it all, you're probably laying the groundwork for what you're doing now, which is amazing amount of running. How did it all kind of come to fruition for you?
Well, it started in high school.
Okay.
Honestly, we had a great coach, Bruce Peepers.
Okay.
Not sure, from North Olmsted. And he kind of planted the seed that you're not going to get anywhere unless you put in the work. And so then, as a young kid, that kind of started out my thinking and that to control my mental. And then I go to West Point, and within I get there in July of 1976. By October, I'm running my first marathon in October, the first New York City marathon that went through all five boroughs. And it just, that's how it started. Fell in love with long distance running and got on the marathon team.
Okay.
The Army Marathon team. So it's kind of how it started.
And so you go from, dabbling your feet into, long distance running with the marathon situations. But the discipline, getting back to the military, West Point and all that it entails.
Yeah.
That probably really laid the groundwork for this, correct?
Well, it helped. It did. I think, honestly... When I look back, the academy built on what Coach Peepers taught us. I mean, I can honestly, he was just a genius to how he, instilled in us, the work ethic and things like that. But anyway, so West Point builds on that. And then when I graduated and I was in the Army, then I went to Ranger School. And Ranger School was really an eye-opener because you get broken down to almost like a shell of yourself and they just don't stop, but you cannot break or you go home. And, so I think that really woke me up to another, like, I didn't know I had that in me type of mentality.
It's like, yes.
Yeah. It's like, I can actually, you can go farther than you think you can, in a sense.
Yeah.
Because people were dropping like flies. I mean, you know. And as for some reason, I can't explain it. I didn't want to quit.
How tough was, give me an idea of what a typical amount of like training or or drills that you guys would have to go through on a daily basis back there in Ranger School?
Yeah, well, you're on a 13-day patrol. You don't get any sleep. And every time, and then you're graded on your patrols. So it's like a small mission. So you're the patrol leader, and you got to select your team, you know. And when that's done, then somebody else is selected.
Okay.
But this entire group of Ranger School, you know, attendees, they're part of that. You know, when you're the patrol leader, they're now the team. They're your team. Then when they're the patrol leader, I'm part of their team.
I see. Okay.
And it's for like 13 days. You don't get any sleep. And Ranger School was 3 months long. So that was one of the exercises. And then you come back, you take a little break, and then you go back and you do it again. And back then, we were training. It was still the jungle. So we were thinking we were going back to Vietnam because the Middle East hadn't started yet. So you do 3 months in Fort Benning, and then you do 3 months down in Florida. And that's where all the jungle training.
Gotcha.
And, it was tough. For some reason, I'm still here. And I got my Ranger tab, and I'm a happy guy.
That is no small accomplishment. That's amazing. And what even kind of is something that resonates even more with your story is you go from the military, then you go to even more structure or same amount of structure. You become a police officer. Tell me about that transition and how that fueled even more of a desire for the current state that you're in now with your running.
Yeah, so it's a semi-military type operation.
Yep.
You know, not full, but semi. But I started out and went right on the night shift. I mean, low seniority, you know. But I enjoyed that.
Okay.
Because we had small children. So it allowed me to, and I was used to working around the clock. That didn't bother me. And I could deal with the kids during the day, take them to school, you know, do all that, and help my wife when she was working, and then go back to work. So I think, I don't know, kind of, you had to have some semblance of having it together.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, and so I think that helps. And then with how it connects with the running is when the kids went to school, that was my time. I just put as soon as they got on the bus or as soon as they left for school with the neighbors or with kids or whatever, my running shoes were on and I was gone 2-3 hours just to de-stress.
So you went from your first marathon, you said was the New York City Marathon.
Yeah, that was at West Point, yeah.
That was while you were in West Point. So we've gone from West Point to now you're, you know, a day-to-day officer. You would become a sergeant. You have a long career, which you've retired from. As a law enforcement personnel guy,
right.
And all the while you're dabbling in the long distance running. Were you doing marathons back then? Were there tons of marathons that preceded the 100 milers that you got in? I kind of want to know how this breaks down.
Yeah, so did the New York City in 1976. Then we did two Bostons while we were there at the academy. And we went to the one in D.C., the Marine Corps Marathon.
Marine Corps Marathon, that was a big one. Yeah,
yeah, we did that three of the years that I was there. And we did some others, some local around the New York City area.
Okay.
Then I ran my first ultra, a 50-miler in Connecticut in 1979.
Okay.
And at that race, I heard about the Western States.
Okay.
That was really the only game in town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back then, the 100 miler. And so then I graduated in 1980, always had that seed about the Western States. And so I had orders to go to Fort Knox.
Okay.
And I started training, and then I applied twice to go to Western States. And I got accepted the second time.
And this was really in its embryonic stages. For those of you that are listening and might not be aware, Western States was really the first 100-mile ultra marathon.
Sure.
Starts, you know, in a skiing community, up in the mountains out west, and races 100 miles to a small town in California. And the cool thing about the race is, the lore is that it originally was a horse race.
Right.
And then there's this gentleman.
The Tevis Cup.
The Tevis Cup. And pick it up from there for is where Gordy gets involved in this and how it's born.
Well, basically, so they used to have this big horse race, 100 miles, through the old stagecoach route, and they called it the Tevis Cup, which was kind of a big deal for the horse folks.
Yeah.
And this one fella said that, hey, I think I could run and I could beat the horses. And he was younger then.
Okay. And just a little break here for the dog. That's no problem at all. There he goes. No problem. This is a podcast, Ron. Anything can happen. And that's your little girl, Roxy, outside. Checking out the neighbors. That's
she's
all.
She's
letting everybody know what goes on. I've got a dog, Scarlett, my running buddy. Okay. Scarlett will let you know what she thinks. So Tevis Cup, Gordy says, I'm going to run 100 miles, you know, and I'm going to beat these horses.
And I think I can beat these horses. And so he does. So he runs it. Now, when I say he does, he runs it. And he's successful. I don't know if he beat the horses or not, but soon after that, it became, you know, some other runners, you know, and people said, hey, I think we can make a race out of this, an ultra marathon.
Yeah.
And it became the Western States 100. And back then, you did not need a lottery like today.
You could just get in. Nowadays, people are unaware of ultras. You've got to get in a lottery to get in some of the bigger races.
Including Western States now. But back then it wasn't that difficult. So I entered 1 year. For whatever reason, they didn't pick me. It was 1982, and then 1983 they picked me, and I went and ran it.
That was your first one that you
first 100.
And one of the most iconic 100-mile races that there is. How many have you run?
So how many 100-milers?
Or how many of the Western States? You did the one in 83.
Yes, and I was thinking of going back this year in 2023, even though it's over.
Yeah.
For because it was been 40 years since I've been back, but I didn't want to, because Mohican, and was in June, and then Badwater was in early July, and Western States is always at the end of June. I didn't think my 65-year-old body could hold up. So I didn't even apply.
You were thinking about the recovery time, and yet we've seen some amazing instances of individuals that have done, everything from Western States to Badwater to Hard Rock, all of these iconic races, and they just keep blowing through them. And what we saw this year with Courtney DeWalder, what she did, it's just absolutely spectacular.
Yes.
But back to you. You are on this mission to run 100 100-mile ultra marathons.
I'm hoping if I could stay healthy, I think I got a shot in the next 2-3 years.
Where are we at right now?
Well, right now, close to 87.
I think
I got to do an official count, but I think I'm at 87. So I got to go back to all my records, because the guy that is the proprietor of the 100-100 club.
Okay.
You gotta have proof. And so, like, the Western States is good. They have, before it was handwritten, and they put it in a digital format.
Yeah.
Some of the races weren't digital back in the 80s.
Okay.
And so I'm having trouble finding results for two of the races.
Okay, so you have to literally yourself, you've got to authenticate every...
Yes.
One of these. How many people are in the 100-100? I mean, there can't be.
I think there's. Okay, you can't hold me to this. It's under 30.
I would have even thought even less than that. That it just seems like such an amazing accomplishment, Ron.
Yeah, I think there's 26 or 27 folks in the 100-100 club.
Yeah. Well, for people to understand, 100 mile races. Let's just let them understand one.
Okay.
Your mindset as you prepare for one, and then race day starts and the competition begins. Take us through that. Just some of the demons that you deal with, the pain caves that you visit, all that stuff.
True and true. Yes, there are demons. But the demons you're talking about, that's the mental side of it.
Yeah.
The pain cave is the physical side. But as I prepare, you know, I'm on the trails, you know, around here and on the
Getting your
trail,
mileage in.
So. Getting the mileage in. But the longer you go, the more mental it is. And so when the demons, and during the race, everything changes after 100K, which is 62 miles. Mm-hmm. Then the doubts just skyrocket, and you really got to fight that. Those are the demons that are telling you to stop and let's rest and whatever. But I just want to say that the strength, the mental strength, when those guys at Ranger School couldn't break me, I always go back to that. I always go, hey, they couldn't do it, and I'm not going to do it. I didn't come this far to come this far.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep going. Same thinking. It's just kind of funny how, I don't know, that's my, my base.
Mm-hmm.
Those days back in the military, I just go back to that and go, hey, they couldn't do it, I'm not going to do it now. It's funny how I'm always remembering that.
Take our listeners through how it might even be over the course of one ultra marathon, 100 miler, let's say, where it could be ankle in the first 20 miles, and then maybe it's, my God, it's your hip in for another 20, and then it could bounce over to a strained calf muscle. How you negotiate yourself through that?
Well, because there's a thought. The thought is, if you're never going to be 100% healthy.
Never.
I think when you're always going to have a ding with something. And if you wait till you're perfect, then you're going to be a grandpa sooner than you think, and you're never going to run. So anyway, so to get yourself through that, I think I just, you know, go back to the mental game. It's like, it's, I don't know, there's, I can do this, I guess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't have the magic elixir or the magic answer.
Yeah.
But I haven't had, I guess I haven't had such a significant injury where I had to stop. I've had the naggers, you know, and I've turned an ankle here and there, but you just find a way to keep going. I don't think it was that significant. Like there was never a break, you know, a bone break or anything like that. But I don't know, I guess it's just how much do you want it, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like that. And it just propels you. And as long as you have enough time and you're not behind the race cutoffs,
you're going to be able to finish. You can envision that. And then next thing you know, most of the races, roughly 30 hours is kind of like a cutoff.
Yeah, a lot of them.
That you have.
A lot of them now are 32.
Okay.
A lot of them. The 30 hours, I mean, a lot of them are 30, but
sure.
It seems to me they're changing that.
Okay.
I don't know. I know Vince at Burning River is going to keep it at 30, but but the goal is to finish. I'm telling you, there is victory in a finish when you run these 100 milers, because that ride home or that flight home feels a lot better with that belt buckle than if you don't have it.
It's just that sense of accomplishment. It's just
sense of accomplishment.
And it keeps 100%. You coming back. 100%. And it keeps you coming back.
Yes.
Mohican. How many Mohicans have you done?
28.
28. You have finished 28 100-mile ultramarathons.
At Mohican, yeah.
Where do you rank Mohican versus the Western States versus some of the other hundreds that you've done?
I think Mohican's the toughest. And the only reason is because the time of year that it comes and what we deal with weather-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Because some years it's been really hot and humid, 90s, cutting through humidity is crazy. And then some years it's just a downpour and you're slipping and sliding. And those are tough conditions to run in.
Mm-hmm.
And I always say Mohican compared to Western states is a downward,
you know. Yeah, it starts high and kind of makes its way down to Auburn.
Right, down to Auburn. So, yeah, you got your ups and downs in your mountains, but Mohican is relentless.
Wow.
If you're not going up, you're going down. If you're not going up, you know, there's no towpath or little flat sections. It's just up or down, and you gotta. I remember before the race, there was a guy from Oregon. He came to run Mohican,
okay.
And we were at the pavilion after the race start meeting. We had a meeting.
Okay.
He said, "Hey, I heard you've run this before. What's the course like?" And I said, "Follow me." And we walked outside of the pavilion, and I told him, I said, "Look around," and I said, "What do you see?" And he looked around, and there's hills.
Yeah.
I said, he goes, "There's a lot of hills, you know." I said, "That's what you're gonna get." I said, "And it's not gonna stop. It's gonna be hilly until you finish."
And there's no chance to really, you know, there's no flat level for 6-7 miles. There's no running on the towpath like we would for
Burning River,
where it's almost like mindless running, even though you're out in the open and you're exposed to the sun and stuff. But it's, you're not worrying about tripping. You know, you just kind of get some mindless miles in, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think it's tough. And my longevity there is, I mean, I just love the place.
Yeah.
It started, I was a Boy Scout, and I got my hiking merit badge at Mohican.
Okay.
And I still got the patch downstairs. I still got my Mohican patch.
Down on the wall with all all the numbers and stuff.
Well, it's not on the wall, it's on the shelf. But I'm so proud of that. And I just, Mohican, I have such a history.
Yeah.
And I want to be the first to 30 and see if I can get that 3,000 mile buckle.
That's an amazing accomplishment, and pushing towards 100 milers, it's insane. And then yet you've done races beyond that. You've done one of the iconic ones in Badwater.
Badwater, yeah.
People unfamiliar or just tuned into the podcast and wondering all about ultramarathoning, if you will. Badwater's, it's in the hottest spot on earth, basically, and you're running 135 miles. Now, you do get to go up into higher elevations where it's not as hot, but take us through what it's like to run 135 miles in that searing heat at Badwater.
Yeah, well...
And the preparation for it.
Yeah, the prep... Okay, so the prep was probably the hardest.
Okay.
I didn't change much as far as my mileage, you know, and I kept 70... 80, 90, 100 mile weeks. Didn't change that, but I...
Did you run in saunas like I hear that people do and that type of stuff?
I did sauna training.
Okay.
And the sauna here, our rec center reached 190 degrees.
Okay.
So, but I couldn't stay in it, you know, for the longest I stayed in one time was an hour and 2 minutes. And most every other time was 40 to 45 minutes. And the month leading up to Badwater, I was in that sauna every day.
Gotcha.
Every day. 30 day was...
Right up.
Yeah, right
up. It was like your altitude training if you're going to be running UTMB or something like that.
Sure.
You're doing
that.
Strictly that to kind of acclimate.
Yeah, so when we get to Badwater and it was 117, well, it was 115 the day before the race. I thought I didn't have any issues. I thought the heat was overrated.
You didn't tell anybody that, did you?
I didn't tell anybody.
Somebody would say, "This guy's insane."
Yeah, that's right. I just thought, okay, it's not too bad. It's like springtime. Because, you know, you go 190 was hot.
Yeah.
And so really you're only in, and then at Badwater, you're only in the heat probably until, I'd say, half of the race.
Okay.
Because then, like you mentioned, then you start... you climb out of the valley, and then you start your headed towards Lone Pine, getting a little higher, then you head towards Mount Whitney. So, but I honestly, the heat wasn't really a factor for my race. You know,
the extra mileage, was that the most you've run, or have you done any 200 milers?
Yeah, I did the Buckeye 200 in 2019.
Okay, so 4 years ago, age 61, you did a 200 miler.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow.
And and a couple 24 hours, you know, back in
sure.
the day
yeah.
that were over 100.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Is your favorite kind of a 100-miler, is it a point-to-point? Is it something where it's manageable, where you know you're going to do a few laps of, you know, loops, if, as it were, of some, how, what is, you know, what resonates the best with you as far as those types of races?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Because Burning River has been like two different ways. It was point-to-point from, you know, Willoughby Hills to Squires all the way down to Cuyahoga Falls. And now it's an out-and-back type of thing. Different.
Yeah, that's a good question, though. I don't really have a preference. I liked, we did that Five Lakes 100 in August. And that was point-to-point. And I like that because you know, like the old Burning River course, you don't have to retrace your steps. But I really don't mind an out and back as much, or a loop course. A loop course is easier because you can manage your stuff, your supplies. And so I really don't have a preference.
Okay.
I just like, but I like the 100-mile distance. I like that more than anything.
Yeah, people, you know, it's hard for people still to wrap their mind around it, and I certainly don't belong in the same league with you. I've done like 600 milers. I've only finished one, and but still, I can still point towards the beauty of having a great crew, which I kind of wanted to get into next.
Okay,
how essential, tell our listeners how essential that is to just. Just have the right combination of people or person behind you that believes in you and that, you know, talks some smack to you because you're, you know, letting the doubters in your mind talk back at you and say you can't handle this.
Yeah, well, a lot of my races I don't have a crew.
Okay, all right.
I'm solo. And but it makes it really special when you do have a crew.
Got it.
Now at Badwater you have to have a crew. It's required. And so I had my wife, my son, and a friend of my son's.
Okay.
We had a three-person crew, and they were fantastic. We were getting some criticism from some veteran Badwater runners, like, so you're a new runner, and you've never been here, and your crew is your wife and your son, and they've never been here. So they were kind of like, okay, but we conquered.
Yeah,
we went out and we did it, and but they were fantastic. They anything and everything I needed, they had it, and you know I owe them a lot. I get emotional because they were there for me.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah,
you know, that because people just can't wrap your mind around how. I give you credit for doing them, as you say, unsupported, at least, but as far as crew is concerned, you have your drop bags and all those types of things, I'm sure. But you know, it's such a dedicated effort by people that aren't invested in it in the way that you are invested. No, this is your body. This is your 100-mile streak you want to keep going or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
This is you wanting to finish Badwater. I mean, believe only 40 are allowed to run in the race, right? Or well, very small, or they heated it, right?
He allows 100.
Okay.
He selects 105, hoping 100 will show up.
Okay.
Something like that, so.
Well, I mentioned 40 because I think my wires in my brain were jumping me over to Tennessee and Barkley. Are your thoughts on Laz and what he's done to have this race, the Barkley marathons? It's gotten its own cult following. You know, a lot of videos about it. I consume anything that is. This past year, they actually had three finishers, which was astonishing. What are your thoughts on that? And then also the next grade of ultras that are in all these backyard ultras that are taking place. What are your thoughts?
Well, so first the Barkley. The Barkley, like Badwater, has always been on my bucket list.
Sure.
I pulled off the Badwater, but I don't think I can do Barkley. I think it's passed me by because I think I'm too old. I just don't think I can do it. And then now with the newer backyards.
Backyard ultras.
Yeah, the same thing. I think, honestly, I think they've passed me by. I'm not a young kid anymore. And I don't know if I could do, you know, every loop. You got to run 15-minute miles
yeah
to get that hour. And I don't know. I don't know. I've always wanted to try one, but I don't think I guess I'll just stick to my plan. And
that plan is those 100-100s.
Yeah, get my 100-100s and make sure I can make the cutoffs, those races. I think that'll be good enough.
Well, what you have done has just been absolutely incredible. And there's been some tremendous ultramarathoners from our area. The speedy ones, the ones that have set 24-hour records. You know, the late Mark Godale, may he rest in peace. Connie Gardner. There's just been some fantastic runners, and it's a beautiful sport. The people are amazing. I just really enjoy any time I'm at an event and see other people. They come from all walks of life. Yeah. And some had very modest inclinations as to what they were capable of. Some, you know, weighed 100 pounds more than when they got started. You run into those stories all the time, right, Ron?
Absolutely. Yeah, everybody always has a story. And a lot of it's related to either being a former addict,
yeah,
or an alcoholic, and they changed their ways,
yes,
became an ultra runner, or like you mentioned, they wanted to do something about their weight, and they chose to run, and it turned into a marathon, then an ultra marathon, then a 100-miler, and so yeah, a lot of those. There's a lot of folks out there that are and well accomplished.
Yeah.
You know, after they've turned their life around. So.
Yeah, and it's kind of cool to see the difference in like the spectator sport aspect of this sport. Here in the States, it doesn't seem to be as big of a deal as it is over in Europe, you know, with all the sky running that takes place,
yeah,
and how like the Kilian Jornets of the world are such, you know, household names over there,
right,
not necessarily here in the States. Does that have any appeal to you, to going over in running? You've never done any of the iterations of a UTMB, have you?
No, not in France. But when I was stationed in Germany in the military, we ran the Biel 100K.
Okay.
Twice, so that was kind of fun. And then I did a 100-miler over in Illesheim, Germany.
Okay.
So, kind of my Europe running. But you're right, they do love it over there.
They do.
They love their, what do they call it? Not the triathlons, but they have bike races.
They have bike races,
monster bike races that they love over there too. It's like, holy smokes. But you're right about here. Running's not as popular, and I don't know.
Just definitely not the ultra. But I think it's gained some gained some footing, no pun intended, here in the States, but also, you know, the amount of folks that can run in a race, I think that's all been regulated, and I think smartly by what a trail can, you know, you don't want 3,000 people trampling through Mohican, and then it won't be Mohican anymore, you know?
Right.
So I guess you have to certainly bear mind of what Mother Nature wants to put up with.
Yeah, but he caps it. You know, at Mohegan.
Yeah, what I meant. Yeah,
but it never reaches the cap.
Okay, so that's what that tells me. It's one of the tougher races that you're gonna, because a lot of people don't want to take it on. Yeah.
Some races will sell out, and they have more than enough. Some don't, and yeah, it's kind of interesting how that is. Yeah, how he can't sell it out. He wants to, but kind of interesting.
Yeah, then if Mohican were somewhere over in the Alps, or you know, or somewhere in France or Italy or what have you, you know, there could be 2,000 people running in that race, like there is at UTMB. I always find that to be the most amazing sight, to see the start of UTMB and then to see the finish of it. To see Courtney running down a corridor, or Wamsley running down a corridor of thousands of people, and. You know, here in the States, it's not so much, you know, like at Hard Rock, you'll see him running and kissing the rock. And Western States finish at the high school, around the track. But, you know, over in Europe, it just seems to be bigger and they televise it more, it seems like. You know, they have a series and you can watch on YouTube some of the races that in a series, the sky running series and what have you. Really fascinating. But
it is.
For you, your story is really resonates with me because you've come through such a tremendous amount of discipline that you built up in earlier in your life, and it's kind of forged the path that you've taken.
Yeah, I thank my dad for that.
Well, he was in the service. He set the example, didn't he?
He did. He was a Korean War vet, and he instilled in my family service.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us, the three boys, I have a sister, but my younger brother went to VMI, my older brother went to Annapolis, and I go to West Point.
Wow.
And he that's how he saw. I mean, I don't want to say that's how he saw it. He wanted us to go into the military.
Okay.
But we ended up going that route. But yeah, it all started there. And when I was at West Point, another thing that helped was I was with the first class of women.
Oh.
So we saw a lot of some tough women.
Yeah.
Just, you talk about overcoming adversity. Wow. And that was when you could still haze back in the 70s.
Yeah.
And there was no love lost between the new class coming in with women and the old school, the old guard.
Yeah, the old guard, the old way of thinking.
The old way of thinking, and they didn't like it. But some of these women, wow, you talk about tough.
Yeah.
And I get emotional because some of those ladies now are my friends, and we communicate on Facebook. And what they went through is just. I don't know.
Opens up your feelings towards them.
Yeah.
Gives you that empathy that they really had to be tough to be the barrier breakers and to put up with the BS that the old guard, as you said, was.
It was like four. It's like I go through Ranger School and it's 3 months, and so I tell you, they try to break you, but
yeah.
You can't break, or you don't make it. They went through 4 years of that, and it was just constant. Daily, just throwing at just whatever they was thrown at them, they somehow got through it.
I mean, just look at look at the history of like even endurance racing here in the States. Was it Catherine Switzer? How she had to, basically
Boston.
Go, to sneak onto Boston to run in that race before she was pushed off the, and her boyfriend had to defend her to be able to run. And
great example.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. And so you get her, and then you get Title IX, the historic ramifications of Title IX, and then. Nowadays, you look in the endurance world, one of the greatest ultramarathoners of all time, and certainly of this era, is Courtney Dewalder. And she's out there running, winning 200-mile races.
She did the three-peat.
She can do
the Hard Rock, Western States, and not Badwater, UTMB.
UTMB.
Did that?
She's done that. And so, I love the sport in the sense that as I mentioned before, it's just all types of people, men, women, doesn't matter where you come from. If you have a feeling that there's more to what you're made of than what you think, try an ultra marathon. A marathon's great. I'm not denigrating marathons, half marathons, 5Ks, 10Ks. Get out and get uncomfortable. And you certainly have been doing that. Is that the kind of advice you would give for somebody who's getting into the sport?
Yeah. I would tell people, get like you just said, get comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just, you're going to find, like some people will say, you found another gear.
Yeah.
It's like you're going to find something about you that says, you're better than you think you are. Athletically, you're better than you think you are. You can do more than you think you can.
Yeah,
and you're gonna find that. But you gotta try. You gotta get out there and do it. But
mm-hmm.
You'll find that you have something in you that'll, I don't know, get spark it and want you to keep doing it.
And you may find also, too, you not necessarily as much, Ron, because you run by yourself. I mean, I'm sure occasionally you might have a pacer, but for the most part, you're out there gutting it out on your own. Boy, I'd love it when people join me to pace. And and one of my greatest memories is finishing Burning River 100 with my son running the final 20 miles with me and running down the streets of Cuyahoga Falls.
Yeah.
After running 100 miles in 29 hours, and there's your son right at your side, and he's with you stride for stride. And he was there in the middle of the night, you know, we're both with our headlamps on, our torches on our heads, and looking out for you. And that's what you can find in the sport. There are opportunities for people to use pacers, and it's a cool way to share. And then I can never give enough, you know, thanks and credit to my wife. She's always crewed me for all these races. And the easiest one I did to date was the 24-hour event at Chapin.
The
024. The 024. And that was the first time I ever did one that was a mile loop. And so, you know, as far as the crew, there was no pressure on the crew at all. All my stuff was there every mile. That was kind of cool. So there's just so many different ways to get into the sport, and I just hope anybody that's listening has just started their journey with ultramarathoning, realize I'm talking to a guy that's going to, by hook or crook, he's going to finish this goal of his of running 100 mile ultramarathons, and it's an incredible goal that you have, and you're real close to it, and so much work has gone into. I give you tons of credit for what you have done. And I wish you all the success in the world.
I'm hoping, thank you. Thank you.
Sure.
I'm hoping, so that's not going to end though. I mean, you get the 100s and then the volume will cut back and then I'll focus more on my, I got goals in the marathon world too.
Okay.
So, but they're shorter. Those are shorter races. And I can keep going longer. But yeah, the 100s, because this year I'm running 900 milers.
You're 65.
I'm 65. Yeah, and running the 100 milers isn't the hard part.
It's recovering.
No, it's those marathons. Like I got a 50K tomorrow.
Yes.
In Youngstown.
And you ran a 100 miler just last week, or was it 2 weeks ago?
No, last week.
Last week.
Yeah.
So you're in less than a week, you're coming off a 100 miler, and you'll be running a 50K, which is certainly no picnic at all.
No, but that's what's hard because I got all these streak races.
Ah,
so I've done all of them tomorrow, and I want to keep that streak going.
I see.
So that's what makes it hard because I want to do my hundreds, but then the streak races are there, like Cleveland,
mm-hmm.
and the Cincinnati Marathon and the Akron Marathon. They're all streak races, and you got to fit in the hundreds around those. So, because I think I can keep doing those after I reach that 100-100 goal. Just keep those streak races. So I'm trying to keep the streaks alive as well so that when I cut back that volume, keep going on those, but we'll see.
It's an amazing undertaking. All the best to you, my friend. Great to chat with you, Ron. And again, if you're listening and you want inspiration, look no further than this 65-year-old man who's closing in on an amazing career accomplishment. And I give you all the credit in the world. So thanks again for being on the pod.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, John. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Thanks once again to talk, to chat, to have a great conversation with Ron Ross, quite the unassuming guy, very humble, and wow, the accomplishments that he has had in his running career, it's mind-boggling. And then to see all of those medals and buckles and photos and race numbers down in his basement, it's quite remarkable. I think the only thing that runs more in his family is his dehumidifier. So he keeps all of those artifacts in pretty good shape. And I encourage you to check out our archives. We do have the occasion to talk to other people that are in the endurance world, if you will. The late, great Mark Godale, kind of one of the OGs of Northeast Ohio ultramarathoning, who passed away in recent years. Just a wonderful human being. And I had the great opportunity to chat with him in one of my first episodes when I began the pod back in 2019. Certainly by being in the sport myself, I was very much aware of the legend of Mark Godale. So I interviewed Mark. He is one of the folks that's in the archives. Pam Rickard is a former alcoholic who straightened out her life and then now works for the Heron Project. And she's just a remarkable lady. And she is so inspiring and upbeat. I chatted with her. She's been one of our episodes. Bo Marchante started a running streak 25 years ago to run 3 or more miles a day. And he is at 25 years and counting. He has not missed a day. Chatted with him. Check him out. We talked to Dr. Richard Schlenk. Now, Dr. Richard Schlenk is interesting on many fronts. He's a neurosurgeon at the world-famous Cleveland Clinic. That in itself is a lot. But he is an ultramarathon man, also a race director. We chatted with him. Des Cowie, who's done not only ultramarathons of the 100-mile variety, she has competed in triathlons as well and has completed Ironman distance tries as well. I encourage you to subscribe, rate, and review. It's one of the best ways to help this podcast keep on growing. Thanks again to my guest, Ron Ross, and thank you for listening. We'll see you the next time on Telich Talks.